At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
But every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens, and painting. Throw it in the water, this red sky is daily. When I talk about these things, they think I'm crazy. There's no escaping anyone, the evil that we're facing. Illuminati mind control, they're sacrificing babies. The end of days, but anyways, my family thinks I'm crazy.
The fact that I don't, the only thing I know is that I know nothing, you know, in every sense and aspect of life. Yeah, short version of that is to see through the lies of the enemy of us. I know it sounds crazy trying to explain it, but there is a very active force. There is a very active, yeah, I believe that we have been conditioned systematically by an active, you could call it force, dehumanize ourselves and be happy with it. And to see through that, to see through the lies of the outer reality and acknowledge the truth. Ah, fuck, I know that sounds fucking crazy, man. Fucking.
You just heard today's guest, Icelandic musician and poet, who joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this conversation with Rolling John. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast, and I am excited to bring you today's conversation all the way from, well, midway across the Atlantic, almost across the Atlantic, a new friend, someone who I am having the pleasure of hosting all the way from Iceland. Rolling John of Iceland joins us here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. I'm your host, Mystic Mark, and Rolling John was just telling me about some of the synchronicities, and I just so happened to receive a gift from Iceland last night. So what are the odds? I wasn't sure which country Rolling John was from, and here we are already, you know.
Hello?
What brought you to the show and, you know, our whatever synchronicities you want to get started with. Just give the audience a little background to get a little more familiar with you, who you are, and what brings you to the show today.
Well, I've been following the podcast actively for about 2-3 years, maybe. And what brought me there, I think, definitely the Juan on Juan podcast. It's been, I listen to a handful of podcasts on a daily basis. Yeah, that being yours being one of them. And what has kept me, how do you say, it's beyond coincidences, the times I have, you know, been in situations, had something on my mind days before, and the next episode, boom. You know, yeah, it's weird of you. Let's say that. And I like the, you know, the title of the episode, the podcast. I mean, yeah, my background, me, can we, let's start for again there, Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Born and raised Icelandic, I'm turning up. 40 years old soon, 2 years, no, 1 year. And yeah, you could call myself, I'm a, you know, college dropout, the typical story there. And early life, yeah, let's say, since I was a really young kid, I've always had trouble with being told, you know, what to do. Problem with authority, being worldly or mindly, should you say.
I can relate.
yeah, that's what I'm saying. And, you know, these conversations, you know, it takes in many boxes each episode of weird connections.
Right.
Which I really don't think are weird at all. You know, myself, I'm a deep diver when it comes to these subjects and how do you call it? Literature.
Right.
Etc. Yeah.
Right. Now, you mentioned getting drawn in through the One-on-One podcast. Big fans of that show here. Juan's a good buddy. Obviously, you know, him and I can't get enough of doing shows together. We just, you know, find all sorts of excuses to do podcasts together. We've gone on a little hiatus lately, so hopefully we'll get Juan back on for some sort of show. But you also mentioned my good friends Roman and Dan, who no longer podcast from the Rising from the Ashes. Roman occasionally will do a podcast with me. I don't know what Dan's doing. We wish him well. Shout out to you, Donunaki Dan. But I imagine the strain or thread that pulled you in from, and I could be completely wrong, I could just be stereotyping you, if you will, so please tell me. But I haven't
believing that word exists, you know, stereotype.
Oh, well, you don't believe it? I think, yeah, it's definitely...
yeah, I mean, I understand that people use it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry for, yeah.
No, excuse me if I do, because, yeah, I wouldn't want to, but maybe it's impossible. But, yeah, I was curious what subject in particular, and I assume it's the Bach saga and this sort of...
Well, yeah, all kinds of the non-conformists. How would you say?
Ah, you got it. Yeah, alternative.
The fringe. The yeah. Fringe of, yeah. Of... I mean, I'm deep into folklore. For example, you know, deep into, I'm very interested in the connection of some sort in every corner of the world of, for example, there I take into, well, you mentioned Bach, I only got into that 2-3 years ago also, but before that, making my own connections, you know, throughout an alternative education on my own, you know.
This is something I want to get into, because the Bach saga, you know, that's a topic we've talked about, and we don't need to retread ground if it's not your main interest. It sounds like it's an interest of yours. But
no, it's a part of it. I just got introduced to it so late. It's a really interesting. Even earlier, when was it? Yeah, maybe this past week, I was doing one of my contemplations, and a fact rhymed with a fact in a book in the boxer, like a fact, another fact. So, yeah, kind of argued with the version of how the boxer goes. I don't remember what it was, but let's talk about that if you would like.
I would absolutely like to. Yeah.
Let's just go. You know, if we go from one thing to another, that's okay. Also.
Okay. Well, I do want to understand you, Rolling John, as a person. And it's not often that I talk to people from Iceland. I think you might be my first Icelandic guest. And some of the things that I've learned about Iceland is that there's a rich and unique piece of cultural heritage that you guys have preserved that I think is a little bit of a time capsule and can teach us things about European culture and beyond. Yeah. You know, because it you, for the most part, Iceland was, you know, separated or isolated from the influence of things like the Vatican or the Anglican Church, right? So up until a certain point, right? And I'm sure we'll get to that. But I just get like a rich sense of folklore that's living when I hear about Iceland. And sure, you know, tourism and all that, I'm sure some of it has to do with that. But one that sticks out in my mind is they were trying to build a road somewhere in Iceland, and they had one of these fairy rings, like a stone circle or some giant boulder that had...
Yeah, it was...
Go ahead.
Probably a rock, yeah, boulder.
Right, so, and this had a deep significance in the cultural heritage, the sort of liminal space that we interact with in our physical world, and... So that always stuck with me. So yeah, I'm no stranger to, you know, what I can learn about Iceland from afar. I've never been there. So it's somewhat of a treat to ask you about this kind of stuff. So I don't want to just go at the Bach saga. I know that's an aspect of it, and we can definitely talk about that for sure. But I do just want to convey my overall interest in what you have. So in that sense, growing up, you said you were sort of anti-authoritarian, sort of rebellious, maybe even towards...
Yeah, I've just always had the feeling of, you know, personal independency becoming all things, you know, let's just say I'm young, questioning the authority of things around me, yeah.
I can relate. And from my young mind, I was doing similar things, questioning authority, but really, you know, in some ways it was limited to what I was interested in. And right. So as I got older, I sort of, these things changed and evolved. But some of the things that I remember deeply believing in as a kid were these mystical folkloric type beings that I would find in books here and there occasionally. Fairies, brownies, gremlins, you know, all the other.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So let me ask you this, as somebody who's maybe more in touch potentially, and again, this could just be my own, you know, the grass is greener on the other side, as we say, but is that, you know, something that was a part of your childhood? I mean, you said you're rebellious, so I imagine you might have even sought this kind of thing out. You maybe looking
at
things that didn't fit with the mainstream narrative.
Yeah, from 2 years old till 10 years old, I grew up on a farm with my parents. You know, we had cows and stuff like that. And the farm was placed next to a small mountain. Okay. I would call it a mountain maybe, but, you know. And, you know, rocks all around. And playing alone as a kid in a farm, yeah. I'm definitely sure that, you know, something is beyond. We call it fairies. I know you're familiar with like the Irish folk tales, you know, with the realm in that one.
We have similar things in indigenous culture in North America.
We have it here also.
And
I think that connection actually comes from the people who were here before the official settlers came here, you know, the whoever people that may have been, but they possessed mythology or their version of science and history, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
And involved connection with, you know, the senses and how we maybe do not have the same senses towards our environment, right, as we maybe did thousands of years ago.
Yeah, I think that's something people instinctually feel, regardless of whether they see it through a spiritual or metaphysical or biological realm. We have this instinctual connection to the wonder of the natural world. And, you know, when you're a kid, you don't have the rigid boundaries of what is and isn't real. So I tend to think that children are more open to these sorts of experiences. So were there any, let's say, pronounced or sort of strange occurrences that you can remember from that period when you're living with the cattle and, you know, on the farm and You know, were
I'm thinking back, growing up around animals, as with the cows, I used to, you know, basically hang with them the time the my parents were, you know, doing milking and stuff. And yeah, it's funny we're going into that direction. But I've always had this, and I think everybody have this ability deep inside, and as you mentioned, as kids especially. But, you know, growing up, stuff around us, either that narrows that window and closes it eventually for most people. But I remember you hanging out with the cows. There was a dog there we called Hopo, the Icelandic sheepdog version of it. He followed me all around. My mother used to tell me, and always in his eyesight, like he always positioned himself, seeing the farm and seeing me. If I, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, we just had
I've always gone through life with those kind of connections with animals in general, like, and trees, plants, my natural environment,
right.
Collected rocks, and you know.
Now
the basic stuff.
Every picture I've seen of Iceland is kind of like tundra, but you know, there's the adage that Greenland is full of ice and Iceland is actually quite green. So I'm kind of picturing, based on your description, more of a pastoral, rolling hills, and maybe a short summer, but overall enough warmth to, you know, get a living with cattle and maybe some.
Yeah, nowadays, I mean, there's maybe, yeah, because of technology, that helps a lot.
So you're saying it's easier now to pull that off with technology?
And I'm saying to, yeah, have 200 cows, you know, milk them instead of having, yeah.
Right.
And of course, tractors to work the fields. And,
right.
But it's mainly throughout history been a fishing nation.
Right. Right. Seafarers. And that kind of brings me to one of the points I wanted to touch on, if we have time for it. We don't have to get to it right now, but in my mind, Iceland is a sort of clue about the pre-Columbian travelers who may have settled in North America. You might have listened to my interview with Dr. I believe his first name was Roland or Ronald Ryan, something like that. Roland Ryan, something close to that. And he was from Newfoundland, Canada, and he was part of a group of people called the Beothic, who, by all intents and purposes, have European features, even though they had been, you know, pre-Columbian settlers and had established themselves for centuries, even like trading and interbreeding and, you know, mixing with all the indigenous people around them. So there's this concept that we touch on a lot on the show here, this idea, this notion that, you know,
I mean, it's mentioned in one of the sagas. I don't remember which one. It's probably, it's when they found Vinland and stayed there for a winter or two and went back like a group of people.
Right. And now for people who aren't familiar, you're referring to Iceland's sagas, which were...
Yeah, the sagas of Snorri.
And this was recorded by Vikings, right? These were like Iceland's versions of Vikings, or did they come from a different part of Europe? Or
These were born second generation, probably, people. And the story, like the story I'm referring to, they leave again to Iceland and take one slave woman with them. But not considered. They took one, I think. That's back with them, and it has been proven through genealogy research that a gene that only follows the mother lineage, some gene. gene reading, if you would call it like that, this Native American has survived in Iceland. Very few people from the northwest of Iceland have, for some reason, like a gene stamp from North American indigenous people. And I think that actually proves the connection, and you know, like this is only one example. I think there are many more. Because I personally believe that these versions that we built of that, particularly Icelandic settlement history and the people around there, I think it's a really shady, I mean, I'm 50-50 on believing half of it, you know.
What makes you say that? Because I'm familiar with...
At least it's glorified a lot.
Well, they say that there might have been Vikings in Iceland much earlier than history, mainstream history tells us.
Or Celtics also, like the influence of the Celtic arm of, had been here. There are theories that the Druids had like an outpost here for God knows what.
Wow. Now, these theories, what else substantiates this? Is it conjecture? Is there evidence? Are there physical?
Mainly maybe linguistic. That theory is built upon the theory, which is, in my opinion, pretty obvious. The more Celtic influences than, for example, Norse in the people who originally and officially, that's why I say glorified, that there are, you know, Picts. Yeah, we are told a version of a story, like in media today. We've always done that, you know. And when the sagas were written, they just wrote a version. So yeah, I'm on that, and I think
you're saying that that just for the audience that might not be following, because
yeah.
You know, there is a little bit of a language barrier, even though we're both speaking English. I'm definitely understanding what you're saying, but I'm getting that what you're hinting at is that there's propaganda even in what is officially called like Iceland's oldest official history. Even that's...
I'm just saying, I personally think that it is pretty obvious that not only us, you know, the world in general, we are always conditioned to the versions of the history and everything around us by points of view, some getting more lifted higher up than others. So,
okay, I hear what you're saying. Not necessarily manipulated propaganda, but it's history is written by the winner sort of sentiment.
And stories and facts are heard.
Well, let me ask you if we could get into some of those, because we're not always just chasing after hard facts and things that are falsifiable, as our friends like to say. But I'm curious about these stories and some of the things that you think maybe are being overlooked in favor of this more Western point of view, in this case, from your perspective, more Eastern point of view, coming from the Vatican and other Central European governments, or, well, mainland European governments. But let me ask you about, because we talked a little bit about the Bach saga, but a big aspect of the Bach saga is the linguistic, the language that has this double, triple meaning. And, you know, when you study, like, any ancient language, particularly, you know, when we look at, like, Hebrew, there's always the gematria or the numerology angle that people put into it because of all the stuff in the, what is it? The Madonna has a copy of it. I'm blanking on the name, the Kabbalah, So, but it's similar. It's almost like a Norse Kabbalah when you look into some of the origins of the Norse language. And I've heard even like the Druids had a language where each syllable consonant was a, like a note from a tree, like an actual species of a tree denoted a actual, you know, figure in their alphabet. So tell me about this, because it seems like a big part of the entire lore here.
Yeah, that about the language. Yeah, that's yes, that is a huge. How would you say the something that controls? I mean, language controls reality, I think, and I think it's what these cultures were highly aware of. You're doing galdur, magic, languages, and I mean words of languages. Don't you agree? They create an image in your brain, and if you put it, the depth between spacing in the letters, the syllables, you say.
Yeah, the spaces between consonants, syllables.
Yeah, I think that the Icelandic is possibly closest to that still, you know, along with other languages of the world. But I'm saying, like, in the, for example, the Germanic, or that we haven't thinned out through as much throughout history, you know, through other influences that systematically maybe are aware of this and try to, I mean, simplify languages. When you simplify a meaning of words in a language, when you, yeah, it all works in the direction of taking away the, yeah, that culture or that language, because language is how a person or a society sees the world expressed, the world around them, you know. So how language is used and controlled is very, so it's a serious matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and it seems to be a war for people's attention and paying attention to certain words and certain rituals over others, and over time, by repetition, you know, certain things are forgotten and other things are remembered, and yeah, that we lose the meaning behind some symbols that I think are preserved because there are secret groups of people,
yeah,
who are fighting against this, destruction of tradition, and they're trying to preserve it for worse or for better. You know, there's a lot of people that will come on this podcast and tell me all secret societies are bad. You know, I've done my own research, and it definitely, there's a case to be made there. But
I
hope that there are secret societies out there that are kind of like the, you know, the wizards of good, who, you know, protect these kind of secrets and keep them safe for the next generation, and maybe even subtly, secretly influence the culture in that direction. I mean, it could be wishful thinking, but yeah, I think these symbols are still culture, and they're potent, even though we might have lost the words and the meaning, you know, they're still there. Even the letters themselves, like you're saying, you know, when you look at the Icelandic alphabet, it's as close to that original tongue, which might have had some sacred qualities. I would argue it did. I mean, I don't know the specific concepts off the top of my head, but I know that according to one guest we've had on the show who has a book called Pi in the English Language, the English language is influenced by, you know, these mathematical codes, and I think some of that is just inherent in these ancient languages somehow.
Yeah, that was actually, you know, what I was trying to get at. You know, the thing when you have to think in another language, you...
Well, and but, hey, we have listeners from all over the world, so if you want to think out loud, there might be an audience to understand your, you know...
Yeah, I was just saying, I have these books written in the 70s.
Okay.
In Icelandic... offer six books in like a book group.
Okay.
He calls them, doesn't matter what he calls them, but
I think it does. Would you?
Yeah, it's a, it, each book has a one rune from the runic alphabet.
Okay. Book. What's his name?
Einar Pálsson. Yeah, Einar Pálsson. It's called Rætur Íslenskrar Menningar, and it's roots of Icelandic culture, menning, yeah. culture of Icelandic side of men and their essence or something like that. Anyway, he goes deep into there, the, both the roots of the influences and the origin of the Icelandic, both language, history, customs, etc. And he mentions that according to studies of not only him, but other Icelandic men and women, the settlement at that time, they would have their properties in circles. Right, yeah, like a circle, parts of land that didn't draw straight lines. And it is said, you know, in the sagas that yeah, you had to walk with your cow and a torch and how long you could walk before the torch went out. Some ridiculous explanations, which maybe are true, but brought forward very occultly. Anyway, he takes an example in these books somewhere. I don't have it in front of me, that in these settlings of land, they used the numbers in the, I can't remember the exact number, but for example, I think it's 432, some golden ratio numbers, or 218.
Yeah, 432 is golden ratio, yeah.
They used that in measuring distances which coincidentally fit between mountains, you know, here and there. And it's like everything is mathematically settled in that connection. And especially in the southwest, I think, he makes an example of the measurements. And it rhymes with how they built the same Peter's Church, no, the church in St. Petersburg, in relation to naming a mountain something that would go with, for example, an the altar. It's, yeah, he mentions that with a golden ratio shit and pi, and the with connection to pi. We went from there, sorry. I'm saying, let's, if you would continue with the pi thing you were telling me about.
What's that?
Yeah, no, yeah. The pi book, that was my connection to the version of how it, that history, you know?
Yes, sorry, okay, yes. Well, I'm thinking of so many other books, too, that come to mind when you talk about these landscape connections, and you're talking about how this church rhymes with the church in St. Petersburg.
Yeah, it's not a church. It's the landscapes in the... like a mountain here, a mountain there.
Right.
Okay. And they call them the names of, you know, that can be translated into the meaning of, for example, altar or something, somewhere where another name. That the main thing being that they use the same type of measurements and calculation in settling the whole country.
Right. Well, it reminds me of a book that should be in front of me, if I could just find the cover of it and read the title off. Well, there's The Grid of the Gods by Joseph P. Farrell and Scott Dunn, but there's another one on the behind me. If I could just place my eyes on there, it is Sacred Geometry of the Earth, and it gets into some sites. Not in Iceland, but in the UK and
But that's the thing: the Orkney Islands, and they are, yeah,
yeah. This book is by Mark Vidler and Catherine Young. Whoa, somebody's on a race. Sorry about that. Sacred Geometry of the Earth, The Ancient Matrix of Monuments and Mountains by Vidler and Catherine Young. But yeah, it does all over the world.
I have to check that out.
It can be a part about Iceland in here if I could, let's just look it up. But
And
talk about the Druids in relationship with these stone monuments and certain mountains. And so you're right on the money there.
And the thing with the name Iceland version also being confusing version, because in Icelandic it's Iceland. And of course you would think, Ís, that's ice, you know. But it's also, and that's in that category of theories, these same people that are into this, that I know about, they say, no, the Ís in Iceland comes from the same Ís as in Isis, Ís, and what, you know, because the Ís has, it is everywhere. It's behind all, somewhere in every corner of religion.
Right.
And so if that would be the case, that it is not Iceland, it is Iceland. And this, you know, all this would make sense in that matter, that this would be the some kind of a special location for a group of people at the time, you know, maybe settle to maybe have like off the grid existence, you know, doing their stuff, which then gets taken over by people who, you know, are the official version of stories, you know.
Wow.
Are you following?
I say, yeah. Essentially, is what you're saying. That's fascinating.
Like the same Ís as in the use in religion,
right,
of a god or a goddess. You know, there are,
well, and it makes me think of our...
And in that, so I go further with that connection, because you were talking about Hebrew and the mysticism behind that language. That when it goes to the tribes of Israel, the 12 tribes, were in the 12 and one lost. So I don't remember the story quite directly, but if you take that version and somehow trace it back as far as you can, and if you take Iceland, we would be the people of Benjamin. That's from one of his books, the guy Einar Pálsson.
Right. Wow.
And that's when you go to Box Saga, they have the tribes of Sven and Dan, you know, who migrate. I think it connects all of these versions, whatever you call it. You can always find the same tempo in the same story told differently, because they're from different languages, which are, at the time when they are told these stories, however long time ago, maybe in a language that people understand in the way at the time. Because just look at our lifetimes. I'm almost 10 years older than you. We have personally experienced changes in meaning of many words. Not maybe significant, but if you take one word today and carefully look at the meaning for yourself or in general in society 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it's noticeable if you have an open eye for it. So what about stories that, even though you can understand what you're reading or what you're interpreting or translating, you can connect words that have a dictionary meaning of, but what is, do you know where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
I think that's really, misappreciated. It's not appreciated.
Right.
As much as it should be, the fact that we have to think about it in that sense.
Yeah, it's being overlooked for sure. But hopefully with the help of this podcast, not any longer. Now, I'm curious how much overlap there is with Icelandic folklore and what we might think of as European folklore. Obviously, we touched on the similarities with the Irish and the fairies and all that stuff. What about the Duatha De Danann? Because there is a whole story that these beings, you know, potentially giants, and you know, there's all sorts of what seem like races of beings that aren't quite like mythological. They seem more like they're just a part of our experience back then, and now they've been kind of relegated or shoved into the category of mythology. Oh, they seem to read a lot more like history.
Yeah, we have trolls, well, trolls would translate into trolls, the giants who turned into rocks at sunrise in some versions of folklore. But if you look at their coats of armor, I think it's called that, coats of armor. The Icelandic, we have these four guardians island, and one of them being translating to, I don't know, cliff giant. He protects the east, I think. So he protects, there is one protector for every, do you call it, cardinal direction? No, north, south, east, and west.
Right.
Giant bull. And then since a giant, a bull, I think it's an eagle rather than a falcon. And last, a dragon. Which is very interesting that we have a dragon in our being an interesting subject for itself.
Let's get into that. I'm fascinated why you would say that, because, yeah, I mean, I can't think of what an Icelandic depiction of a dragon looks like. So is it similar to what we see in like French or English folklore, where they have like kind of almost look like what we now think of as dinosaurs?
Or now, like the nowadays, yeah, nowadays. But what my interest is, I mean, we haven't had this coat of armor, but only until maybe in the 19th or 18th century, after the, I think it's like a copycat version blending in, creating a story. I mean, could be, or because we don't have any literal stories or mythologies Icelandic about a dragon, maybe worms. You know, we have a mythology. One myth is about a giant river snake, which is supposed to be like 20, 30 meters long.
More like a sea monster than a
dragon. Yeah. But a dragon, could it be something that has been mythologized in history to you know, beautify a version of, I don't know, maybe it's just a part of that, or it's a reference to, because it's the directions, you know, it's for every direction, maybe it represents the direction, and it goes along with other versions, because for no doubt did we have possessed of knowledge, which ancient knowledge, which the rest of the world did also, meaning that the official versions we are told of our settlement history and the stories from there have to be altered, or at least, as I say, glorified. It's the TV version of what really went on, because it's, everybody knows it's hard to keep track on what is going on month by month somewhere. How are you going to write a justifiable real history about that 250 years later? Because that's when Snorri Sturluson wrote the sagas, the settlement saga. So, yeah. I think we don't own any of our version of these allegories or mythologies. We haven't lost or changed versions of maybe other more known on a global level. On a cultural level, because if I would have to tell you about or count something up, you know, that I would believe being original Icelandic or stuff, you know, we would always find out that it has a connection to something else. You know, it's just our versions of and explanations throughout the language as it is understood of truths from other parts of the world, you know.
Right. Seems it's like a connected case of cultural infusion where, you know, maybe like America is more cultural diffusion, where our culture goes out and influences other places. Iceland has a history of being influenced by different cultures coming into it, and as you're saying, kind of adopting new stories or different stories. And yeah, you see that with indigenous cultures in the Americas, particularly when it comes to religion. But it is interesting to hear the juxtaposition in what you're saying. Almost sounds like you're sort of pessimistic about the situation. Do you feel like the real meaning is truly gone, or is it just
that? Hey, no, definitely not. You know, I'm convinced quite just the opposite of what you. Pessimistic, that is looking negatively at.
Right.
Yeah, I'm opposite of that. I know. I always call it the age of logic, basically.
Okay.
But I would use the Icelandic word skynsemi. And skynsemi, just logic based on your
experience?
Yeah, experience or expression of what you see here.
Observation, yeah.
Observation, etc. And the language that you are trained to use to visualize, hence take a mental image, you know, and operate physically and mentally from the mental images you create and use, etc.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, that's that time of the show where we take a quick break to thank our sponsors. Shout out to the Hit Kit, the number one way to stay lit, coming up with the coolest 3D printed American-made Hit Kits, the perfect device for any stoner. Use the promo code CRAZY when you check out the Hit Kit on Instagram or hitkit.us, wherever you browse the web. Big shout out to them. And another shout out to Vibe Med X. Listen, folks, Shilajit is changing the supplement world. It came in like a shockwave. It is an adaptogen like no other. I am using it currently to deal with my sunburn, and it is working. So listen, if you want to try something cool, you want to try something new that's actually been around for thousands of years and even got the reputation, the medicine of the gods, well, use the promo code CRAZY at vibemedx.com. Shilajit is the shit, and Sheila Jam, the festival designed to highlight the wonders of Shilajit, is going on right now as we speak. I was supposed to be there, but my car is not working as usual. We got some ignition issues, but that's okay. We're going to fix that up real soon. And yeah, once that's fixed up, we'll be good to go back on the road, back on some more journeys. Vibe Med X, use the promo code CRAZY to get Sheila Jam, Sheila Jeet, so you can stay healthy wherever you're traveling. Next up, we've got BrainSupreme.co, my favorite place to go when I need a little bit of advice on what to do when it comes to microdosing. What is microdosing? How do I do it correctly? How do I know I'm taking the right dose? All these answers can be found at BrainSupreme.co, and you can get yourself the number one microdosing nootropic supplement with the promo code CRAZY and save at checkout. Just go to use the promo code CRAZY when you're shopping around at BrainSupreme.co. Check it out today. Now, last but not least, what am I doing? I'm using my Above Phone laptop to stay on the cutting edge of security and privacy, okay? Constantly, these data brokers are looking for the next piece of information that's going to let them zero in on your habits, your behaviors, your routines, so they can sell you some crap product you don't need, or at least bombard you with advertisements. I mean, we've all had the experience where we say something and then within an hour, we're looking on Instagram or social media, and there's an advertisement with the exact product that was mentioned in the conversation. Why let our phones listen to us? Why let your phone spy on you? Change it now with AbovePhone.com. Go to AbovePhone.com right now and look at what they've got. It's incredible, folks. You're not going to believe me if I even tried to explain it. So just go to AbovePhone.com and make sure you use the promo code CRAZY at checkout to save. All right. Now let's get back to this show right after a quick break to our dynamic ads. Remember, every episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast is ad-free and interruption-free when you sign up at myfamilythinksimcrazy.substack.com or, most importantly, patreon.com/MFTIC. Now let's get back to the show. Hey, this is Mystic Mark with a quick message about Hims and how they can help you men in the bedroom. That's right, ED can be uncomfortable, but that's why Hims provides access to a comfortable solution with an all online process and personalized treatment options. That's right, Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing you with access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. The process is 100% online, so there's no need to see a doctor. Just fill out the intake form on their site and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free. No insurance needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. With hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, Hims can help you find the ED option that works for you. Start your Hims online visit today at hims.com/crazy. That's hims.com/crazy for your personalized ED treatment options. That's hims.com/crazy. The featured products include compounded products which are not approved nor verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality by the FDA. Prescription required. See website details for restrictions and important safety information. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. I'm your host, Mystic Mark. And I want to bring attention to one of my favorite sponsors. That's Mood. Mood thinks cannabis should be accessible, affordable, convenient, and transparent. But most importantly, they believe, and I believe, in supporting the American farmers who make all of this possible. That's right, made in America. Like the outfit that I have on, my t-shirt, my Hard Enco jeans, all 100% made in America. So why would the cannabis I'm smoking be any different? That's right, Mood created an online source for 100% federally legal cannabis grown on small, pesticide-free American farms. You can't beat that, folks. Go American, go local if you can. keep it within our borders. Support this country. And I'm going to support you by giving you 20% off your entire purchase for first-time buyers only. Just use the promo code CRAZY at mood.com. That's mood.com, MOOD.com. I'm telling you, folks, Mood stands behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code CRAZY. So head to mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. Remember to use the promo code CRAZY at checkout to save 20% off your order of American cannabis. Go and check it out today at mood.com, and we'll be right back to this episode in just a moment.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I feel like there's a sort of, with English as opposed to your native language, there's a sort of piecing apart or separation of meaning in the words themselves. Because I get the sense when I hear Icelandic words, you used one word to describe something that takes 8 or 9 English words to understand. So
yeah, and I think that's a part of, like, they do that in Germany also. And in many of these languages that have, you know, same roots. And to say, Icelandic is closest to, you know, the others have evolved more, or what I would like to think they have been systematically simplified. Who would benefit from manipulating people in the way of taking, in this case, something away from them that basically empowers them personally? But yeah, that's how deep the importance of languages go. And I think today, and you can see it for all languages of the world probably, that they get more simple each day, you know, more shallow, you know. Less poetic. The languages get less poetic.
Yeah.
Less. You have to think less.
Yeah. Well, you know, as somebody who only speaks one language, I am a bit stunted, but I guess it is something that I can't blame totally on.
I'm saying it's all languages from my point of view. Like,
right. No, I hear you. I just think there's something about, you know, both cases where one has become simplified almost for this capitalist, consumerist, corporate sort of interest. Mm-hmm. But then there's the other side of it, which is like this religious, restrictive, controlling sort of aspect to it.
Yeah, but they're driven from, both sides of what you mentioned there, I think, are driven by the same human law of needing to control, you know, and get it from there. So,
yeah.
And you mentioned the secret societies before. You know, of course they exist. Like, we're just a neighborhood in a big city, the world here we live in. And of course it has its gangs around the blocks, you know.
Right.
You see, you know, and they are all working out from there.
Well, and on that note, you mentioned the dragon being relatively new to the heraldry or the, you know, symbolic armor of Iceland. The, you know, could the dragon be signifying some sort of secret society connection. I mean, we see the dragon associated with several different groups. And
exactly, you can find the dragon or the lion or a bull or a falcon. Some of it's in all coats of armors everywhere, and it's representing something. I'm not very deep into it. The could be the Midgard serpent type of reference, because we are in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, for example. The Atlantic Ridge, I was going to say, the volcanic ridge that separates the continents. Mm. We are on the top of it. So maybe that is...
When you meant... You mentioned the Isis connection. There's definitely a serpentine aspect to Isis and her goddess energy. Some people would say Isis is maybe what Eve is based on, and obviously Eve plays a role with the serpent, and that's the Christian Judeo sort of angle there. But
yeah. When
it comes to, you know, the volcanic ridge, what comes to mind, and kind of to bring it into the Bach saga again, but also what we're talking about with these uncharted navigators, people, you know, making pre-Columbian voyages, makes me think that in a time where the oceans were different or the sea level was lower, however that panned out, it may have been that Iceland is this last remnant of whatever sunken continent was down, you know, or is now down beneath the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, that has to be a part.
Yeah, last remnant or a newest part of.
Uh-huh.
Because, we are just minerals here above sea level aren't that old in terms of millions of years. In history.
Wow, so it could be that,
We're talking maybe, definitely 180 million, 200 million maybe, but not as, you know, British Isles, for example, if you go there, we are younger than them.
Right. Well, and it's in a volcanic part, maybe not as active as the Pacific Rim, but it's in that sort of arrangement for the Atlantic Ocean. And yeah, it's fascinating because, you know, you mentioned the trolls earlier and how they become stone during the daytime. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of Native American legends around here where I grew up that talk about not only giants turning into stone, but becoming entire mountains and battling what they called thunderbirds, which, you know, maybe could be a mythological eagle. I mean, there are mythological versions of eagles in Western mythology. I mean, the griffin is, I don't know how that fits in. It might not fit in at all to Iceland, but yeah, it does ring. It rhymes a little bit. And I always kind of try to connect these dots because part of my suspicion is that, you know, if there was a lost culture that went under the ocean, Atlantis or whatever you're going to call it, they probably fled to the different parts of the surrounding Atlantic Ocean and been the Americas, and there would have been Africa where Egypt, you know, settled, and all the great cultures of Europe, which...
Exactly. Also, and each have their own different surviving version of, of the past. And just, as I mentioned before, I said if we put it in the connection to Hebrew, like the Israel and those old cultures there, we would be the Benjamins, you know, the tribe of Benjamin. And as you were saying, if it sinks and they go all in its directions, you know, these connections, would you call it allegories or satires or allegories maybe? They're all telling the same story, but it's like the whispering game, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, telephone is what we'll call it.
Yeah.
It's definitely this sort of what Joseph Campbell talks about, where you can see the hero in all these different stories. But I feel like he almost sort of waters it down, whereas the real truth is that there is a concurrent or connected thread that goes through all these different cultures. I mean, just seems like Iceland, again, going back to one of the things we started with, is preserving some sort of truth, whether that connects to Atlantis or it connects to some, you know, Norse origin of Western culture that now they're trying to sweep under the rug because they want it to be, you know, Roman. They want it to have connections to the Mediterranean and not the North. You know, that makes sense to me from your, from what you said earlier about points of view and how the Catholic Church sort of created these official settlements in Iceland and sort of started the official history of Iceland, right?
Yeah, with just all of these old cultures that have gone through throughout history, a systematic, sometimes successful, some many times not. We, you know, that are still with a memory of the, you know, they go through systemic, like I was saying before, thinning out of culture, because culture and the languages and the cultures, you know, when they are simplified, when everything, when you take something that is 100 and you take away always from each side systematically, daily, let's say every 10 years, you take 5 from each side, throw them away, you simplify something. And that goes, you know, that fits in this, you know, in the conspiracy world, which I have been really aware of but since the 2001, I'm really into. That goes with the agenda of the one world currency, one world language, you know, controlled centrally from somewhere. The New World Order conspiracies types. I mean, yeah.
I have some questions about different Icelandic mysteries and strange things that I was able to come across. But on that note that you just brought up, you know, when it comes to where Iceland fits into Europe and their politics, how independent is Iceland? I mean, I have a vague memory of hearing a story about Iceland kicking out bankers at a certain point in recent history. I don't know if that was
the collapse, 2008 collapse. We didn't kick them out. We had not prosecuted them or gave them. Yeah. I don't know. I think it was a failed. I think the bankers themselves maybe are as much of criminals as, you know, runners are for gang leaders, you know. Punishing them, basically, you know, like they are working in an environment that is accepted, that it is even made the general public believe is both necessary and really smart, you know, how society is run. So, yeah, they sent them to jail, but the jail was a form of an open jail. So they were staying in like cabins with access to jacuzzis and shit. So,
wow, yeah. So it's a show.
Yeah, our independence is we took that from Denmark in the Second World War when they were occupied by the Nazis. And we have always been very influenced. I think the independence is not so strong in the sense of standing on an independent feet towards we are controlled and we have been controlled by forces, political forces throughout a majority of our independence, I think, like from abroad.
Right.
But,
yeah.
I mean, we got our real independence, like when you are self-governed, but not like Denmark has. I think the Faroe Islands are like that now. They have their own, you know, Congress and everything. but they're owned by Denmark. We got that in 1918. And then in the Second World War, we finalized it, took the opportunity. And that is another form of politics, and that's another way that is being used to decentralize humans from their own core, you know, like in general, like organized religion and et cetera.
Right. Now, are you seeing people generally in Iceland sort of falling victim to the overall globalist scheme of moving to big cities? I imagine Reykjavik is probably, right, that's the capital city or the main city.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it sort of like that in Iceland?
It is the capital, yeah. Actually just recently on the news, they were talking about the young families moving out of the Great Reykjavik area to, you know, smaller settlements throughout the country.
Okay.
Because it's cheaper and you can work online and stuff.
People are swapping up quickly.
Yeah, but intentionally or not, I think it's, but they are. Your question, I would answer, yeah, they are influenced. And I think just it is because of this control I'm talking about that we do not, I mean, I don't think it's the decision of the people who think they are in power. I think they are following not examples, but ley lines of cultural declination of we are just an example of many around the world, you know. They're trying to push their, it's a ridiculous to use the word there, but you know, there are influences and it's obvious, I would think, you know, that they are being manipulated on a very high level in our lives, in our realities. That's something that is, for me, very obvious. And that doesn't mean that I roll around in that contemplation, you know, daily or stuff like that, but it's good to be aware of.
Well, let me ask you about that, how you deal with that, because I'm still curious what Rolling John means to you. And I don't know, to me, from everything I know about words and how I interpret things, when I hear Rolling John, I think of like a Rolling Stone, you know, somebody who's kind of free. I think of things kind of roll off your back, the sort of phrase that, like, you know, you don't let things bother you very easily. So, like,
the fact that since childhood, not being very kind, taken kindly to any kind of authority.
Right.
In that sense, and it came about because I was really good in rolling joints in a group, but
there you go.
It stuck. But then, of course, I have held on to that name as both a stage name and a writing name. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. When you write, or you go on stage, what are you primarily, are you doing spoken word? Are you?
No, I'm on stage. I play guitar.
Oh, wow.
Acoustic guitar.
Okay.
I've written songs out of poetry. It all started with writing down some kind of poetry. Always done that. Always out from that, writing songs on a guitar, just, you know, like the troubadour style, some folk music, harmonica. And
yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Cool.
I'd love for you to share some of your music with me, and I'll definitely share that with the audience, if you will.
Send us
a link, and we can link it up in the podcast description for sure.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So
I have a SoundCloud account under the name Rolling John.
Oh, you have a song by
SoundCloud. SoundCloud account. Sorry.
Right, right. Okay, SoundCloud. Cool. Yeah. Well, send me the link, and we'll make sure people can find that real easily in the podcast episode description. So that's interesting. I'm very curious to hear more from your music. I don't want you to have to describe it or talk more about it, because I know it's probably best to listen to it and experience it that way. But I'm curious, as far as, you know, synchronicities go, I know it's not always easy to pull one out of the many that happened to us throughout the weeks and months and years, but were there any particular things in your mind that you wanted to share with me while we're here, you know, speaking?
Yeah, but first that comes to mind is the actual title of your podcast, because, and how that comes about for yourself, is that I share almost exactly the same story, to the point that, you know, being asked to, you know, maybe seek some professional help about it.
Right.
Any suggestions for that, you know? So, and just, yeah.
Well, I'm
coming sure. from the, exactly the same.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure poetry, music, and, you know, that being an outlet, just like podcasting is my outlet, you know, you get invested in anything that you love, you put your heart into, and people who don't share that have a hard time relating to it, you know, whether they think it's crazy or what have you. But let me ask you this. Is there anything subversive or conspiracy related about your, I mean, obviously you're anti-authoritarian, but do you sort of try to let that influence your music and your artistry? Is that part of why they think you're crazy?
Yeah. I mean, maybe in the sense of just being, you know, pointing out the nakedness of the emperor, and pointing out controversies in, you know, just, you know, I don't know, it's just why does one express, for what reason? Maybe just to challenge, I don't know. It's about everything, man.
Well, let me ask this. On the note of our family thinking we're crazy, you know, how would you advise somebody out there who was feeling the same way? You know, how do you personally walk that road? Do you care? Do you mind? Do you let it go?
Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, I went to the point of believing it myself at the end, you know, and having a rough path for a period of time, until I guess the point where you, as a person, just, you know, because we don't express us correctly in the meaning of, you know, ending up being called crazy correctly, or what's the word for not being, to say stuff when you're not supposed to be talking about that in that situation. What's the word for it?
Inflammatory, maybe.
to invade people's reality, basically, by oversharing what we are going through and shit.
I would call that brave, you know, because I empathize in the sense.
I didn't. My flaw in was the. I would say based on integration, the conditions of my outer reality rather than my inner reality. And in my case, it was just, it's this deep dive into the self andness, who I am, you know, beyond my name or my worldly existence. So yeah, I mean, it's basically what every self-helping programs dance around, the fact that it's all in the hips, you know, it's your responsibility of self to recognize, to recondition, to see through it, basically. I made that just by, opening to accept the fact that I don't, the only thing I know is that I know nothing, in every sense, an aspect of life. Short version of that is to see through the lies of the enemy of us. I know it sounds crazy trying to explain it, but
no, it's
there is a very active force. There is a very active,
it reminds
me. I believe that we have been conditioned systematically by an active, you could call it force or something, to dehumanize ourselves and be happy with it. And to see through that, to see through the lies of the outer reality and acknowledge the truth. Ah, fuck, I know that sounds fucking crazy, man. Okay.
No. I'm right there with you, man. I mean, do you see it in a sort of Gnostic way? Because at first, you're reminding me of things I've seen in Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do, this idea that you are your enemy, that you're fighting, and you're fighting your opponent, you're fighting yourself in this philosophical way as you grow and evolve and improve and learn to practice, non-harm in this really deep and extreme way through martial arts. Like, it's the way without a way, this sort of Taoist. Mm-hmm. I do get that sense anytime I've seen, not just Iceland in particular, but Norse religion, Norse paganism. It has this sort of Taoist angle to it, even though that might not be outwardly acknowledged. It comes from a different place, though. It's just this same sort of peacefulness.
Yeah. I think that because you mentioned that, and the paganism, the Ásatrú, the mythologies behind the, at least Norse paganism, and its connections, its philosophy, the connection of that philosophy to the Eastern areas, like even to India or Asia, or their versions of stories. I believe that Ásatrú, there is many hints to that those stories could be originated in reality, like of real people, because the only sources we have, what we consider best sources, are written by this guy, this Snorri Sturluson, when he wrote Heimskringla and Snorra, and what we built our understanding of the mythology on. I think he was just writing oral, real story, like of real persons, X amount of years ago, that developed into the allegoric understanding of stories, again, throughout the language and the changes and how a person understands a word and the use of it at any given time point. Yeah, because apparently we are supposed to be able to trace, the origins literally to them somehow.
Right.
That's one version of it.
Yeah, it's fascinating, I gotta say. John, it is.
It's a form of ancestor belief, if you would put it that way.
Well, and it's a living connection to them through language.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Have you seen the recent news story about the petroglyphs that were recovered somewhere up in northern Canada that seem to be runic?
No, I haven't, but that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, this was new. I forget who was telling me about it, but it was something that they mentioned on Sam Tripoli's podcast, Broken Simulation, with Johnny Woodard.
Oh,
yeah, okay. Johnny brought it up in one of his news stories, but yeah, it's one of many. The one that I'm familiar with is in Peterborough, Ontario, and it has an entire Norse scene with Vikings and all sorts of stuff. I don't mean to keep bringing it back to that one topic, but it is fascinating to see how this all connects across the world. And there's a larger puzzle that Iceland plays, you know, fits in as a piece of, you know, and it's really, something to behold, this language and how it can connect us so far in the past.
Yeah, and the choosing of the location, and I haven't got really deep into if energy grids or ley lines that could fit. I mean, we always talk about the 66 degrees north. We crossed that somewhere, but I mean, I think the same stuff went on here that went on everywhere else and has been suppressed and has been kept down and not talked about.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is something that I'm sure that they would suppress in at least the American media. You know, there's been rumors that the Northern Lights are no longer as vibrant or visible as they once were, and I don't know if Iceland can see the Northern Lights on a regular basis, but
I haven't heard that they're going down on this side, but actually last year, I think, you know, they were quite...
Right? Vibrant?
Yeah, bright and vibrant. I mean, I remember from, they've been purple, green, and all that in between since I was a kid and still are.
Well, and on my, I think it was my 29th birthday last year, it was my 30th birthday last year, we had, for the first time in my lifetime, and I think even in my parents' lifetime, we were able to see what they told us were Northern Lights here in where I'm at on the East Coast. Which, you know, it's pretty far south in Connecticut. You know, we're almost near New York City. So,
apparently the last year was some kind of a huge solar particle hit.
Right.
Like a wave, They saw them down in London also.
I'm glad I brought it up, because you know what real Northern Lights looked like. And when I saw it, you know, of course the news said it was Northern Lights. But when I looked at it, I'm like, this looks like pink and orange. Like every Northern Lights photo I've ever seen, you know, sometimes there's pink, never really seen orange, but I see blue and green and, you know, mostly that. I don't really, you know, I've never seen it with my own eyes. But when they told me that this big pink, you know, sort of, it looked like a sunset in the middle of the night almost. And when they said that was Northern Lights, I was a little suspicious. So as somebody who regularly sees them, what's your take on it? That is more likely solar activity, you think?
I mean, my take on it is, the only thing I know is I know nothing, because, you know, I believe that everything I know is not, it's not as I'm told. So I don't know. There are stories I've heard. I don't know if they come from the Inuit people in Canada or Greenland or somewhere else from, I don't remember, that they actually come up from Earth and not up from outer space. We would call them some types of myths or folk beliefs, but I've heard that somewhere, that people believe that they were coming out of Earth. Yeah, who knows, man?
I think it's something strange. Well, and on that note, if things from other worlds, are UFOs a common occurrence in Iceland? They're often seen. Tell me about
that. I think we aren't really. I think people are really in the shadows with it. I think there are more common than we know about, because and I think that the size of the population plays a huge role into it, and people, you know, word spreads around quickly and everything, and if your family thinks you're crazy, you know, more people know about it than maybe in a bigger population in your near society. So yeah, I actually think, and from those that I've heard people talk about, and it's always through other people, because people don't want to be they want to be anonymous with it. Yeah, there have been some. And more, of course, recently, there is a theory I actually read about recently, and I didn't go really deep into it, but there is a theory that there is actually an underground, American underground military base somewhere in the West, and that had been used for housing some kind of something. We don't know. Probably some technology.
Now, when you say the West of Iceland, is there a certain name for that region?
Yeah, I think it was close to the Snæfellsnes Peninsula, or in Breiðafjörður, probably.
Well, what's interesting is I just found an article over here on my computer that says there was a sort of Iceland's version of a UFO craze where a bunch of people went to what I mean, it could be a different word with the same prefix, but it looks like it reads exactly like what you just said, Snæfellsnes, something.
Yeah, that's actually...
Is that like a UFO hotspot over there in Iceland? Because I'm finding stories about it.
Yeah, Jules Verne talks about, I think, the entrance to Middle-earth.
Wow.
Being there. And then there is the volcano Hekla, which the Vatican in the Middle Ages called the entrance to hell. But that's not in the same area. Oh. But yeah, Snæfellsjökull is supposed to be also an energy spot.
Right.
It has its own protector, since we're talking about protectors, and he was called Bárður Snæfellsás. His story is that he is part human, part, I think, or a giant or something. And there's a cave there that he is supposed to have used called Söngkellir, which translates to singing cave or vocal cave. It has really, really good acoustics. And that fact that this is from the sagas and that explanation that the existence of all that shit, that cave and that half giant, half man, you know, and how that coincides with other versions of mythology somewhere, you know, and the use of the importance of the sound in use for healing, for, you know, who knows.
Right. Well, and, you know, when these locations get identified, oftentimes, you know, people keep them secret and protect them, mm-hmm. not always for the right reasons.
To tell you a simplified story or a made-up story, even or I believe that in all of this perversion, let's say, not history, but interpretations of the past, it always has to, there's some truth in it, because if you follow just, if we give us the fact, that aspect that they follow the, all this stuff, the golden ratio, the, basically, what you call it, physics, and then all theories of physics, except for maybe black matter, and in mathematics, the only thing that exists is truth, it's fact, you know, like that's what I'm trying to say. So if we give us that these people who are reporting throughout history, they have to have somewhere in their reports has to lie the truth, even though it's hidden or obscured or perverted or made to be misinterpreted, it is always there, and it's even made, presented in the way that to see it, you have to go through the contemplation of thinking you must be crazy because it's not what you have been told and the rest of people to interpret. Whoa.
Yeah, it is definitely a whoa. That's for sure, John. Well, John, I gotta say, I'm sure it's later than it is over here in Iceland. I don't know what the Iceland time zone is. Is it the same as...
It's 10:45 p.m. here.
Okay, so it's not too late, but still, I appreciate you spending your evening with me here, and I don't want to take too much more of your time, so...
Yeah, just likewise. Thank you. Thank you for hearing me out.
Of course. No, absolutely. And I hope to have you back on in the future. Maybe we can collaborate on a specific topic or have you back on for a roundtable episode and get your perspective on a particular topic you're interested in. But as somebody who supports me on Patreon, you are always welcome as a guest, especially someone as interesting as yourself with tons of stuff to talk about. So yeah, please touch and let me know if there's something else you want to come back on the show to talk about. But I love the synchronicities. I love the overlap. And yeah, it's really fascinating. So aside from your poetry, your music, is there a place that you're currently working to direct people to? Because if not, the Bandcamp totally cool, or SoundCloud's totally cool. We're going to put the link in the description, but I just don't want to leave anything else out. Is there anything else you wanted to...
No, that's the only place where I've uploaded music, at least. And then, you know, I have a Blogspot, or a Blogger, they call it now, they changed it, which is more, I mean, it's open for everybody to see, but it's mainly in Icelandic, and that's for the written stuff, And that's Blogger. I think it's just also Rolling John.
Well, send me the link to that, because nowadays, yeah, you know, we can all, you know, every browser has the translator, and I'm sure, you know, it'll be mostly readable, and there might be some words that don't translate, but I would love to take a look at that, and then that way I can get some more notes for our next conversation, because, yeah, there's plenty more to talk about, and yeah, I've had a very long day, so my brain was a little out of it, but I appreciate your wisdom and your perspective and crossing another country off our list of amazing people we've talked to. And to put a bow on it, I just came across another article that talks about Greater Icelandia and how Iceland is potentially the tip of a lost, sunken continent. Who knows, maybe...
Maybe
new and emerging. Maybe this is, to your point, a new continent that's coming out of the Atlantic Ocean. So... we definitely
could call it. You could call it maybe.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm joking.
Right on. Well, John.
Thank you really much for taking the time.
Yeah. No. Thank you. Appreciate it, John. The pleasure is all mine. And for the audience listening, check the episode description for John's links. Rolling John, you're the man. Appreciate you. Big love here on the East Coast, out to you across the murky Atlantic over there in Iceland, and everybody tuning in. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Until then, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was our conversation with Rolling John. A little bit of a stop and start throughout the conversation. The language barrier, of course, affected that. I tried my best to edit it so that it would be a smoother listening experience. So trust me, folks, if you didn't enjoy the flow of the conversation, it was much worse before I edited it. Thank you for bearing with me. Thank you for making it to the end. Even if you're upset, I love you. I appreciate you, and we'll do better next time. It's not easy when you interview somebody who doesn't speak English as their first language. If they're a second or third or fourth even English speaker, they're sort of in the moment translations going on in their head that doesn't always flow. with a, you know, flowing conversation. It's not always conducive to a flowing conversation. So regardless, Rolling John is the man. I might have mentioned this on the last outro, but I went on the raft with the Hard Enco crew this past Tuesday. What a blast it was to roll down the river on this big three-man raft. There was four of us in it at one point. We were paddling through whitewater rapids. Nothing too crazy. I don't know what class they are, but they're probably intermediate level. And it was so much fun. We got stuck on some rocks. We just flowed with the water, and it was an incredible time. I am so grateful to be working with Hard Enco. And if you like American-made products, particularly the best pair of jeans you'll ever wear, check out Hard Enco on Instagram or their website, hardenco.com. That's HARDENCO.com. And I've been working with them to create some really incredible, high quality merch. So if you're listening to this right now, you are in luck, because the merch is printed and it's ready to be shipped almost. So I'm going to be posting on our Big Cartel store that we have set up now. Patreon people get first dibs. Like I said, they already have the link. So if you want to get first dibs on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy merch run that's coming out by the end of next week, just in time for the end of summer, check it out before it's too late. It's going to be there in limited supply. And if you sign up on the Patreon, you'll get those pre-orders in before anyone else. So check it out. The merch is going to be on the Instagram and on our Big Cartel store. The link will be on the Patreon first, the Substack first, and everywhere else second. So go and sign up on the Patreon, support the show, and get yourself some of the coolest merch around. I'm printing it myself. I mean, how can it get better than that? And in the future, we're going to have some really cool stuff, organic cotton. I'm telling you, folks, we're going to go above and beyond with this merch. So get ready, buckle up, strap in, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Until then, follow me on Instagram at My Family Thinks I'm Crazy. And wherever you are, immerse yourself in the moment, wherever you are in the now.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.